Welcome back to the Evidence-Based Rheumatology Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Putman, and this is episode 68, Trial of Upadacitinib or Abatacept in Rheumatoid Arthritis. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine by Andrea Rupert Roth on October 15th of 2020. Now, if you listen to this podcast, you know I am a sucker for comparative effectiveness trials. Publish one and I will run to it like a moth towards a light or kid in a candy store. I don't know the right analogy here, but you get the idea. This was published yesterday, and I am already talking about it. Now, upadacitinib, as we all know, is one of the new Janus kinase inhibitors. It's a selective JAK1 inhibitor, and I've talked about it previously in the Select Compare trial. Today, we're talking about Select Choice, which pitted upadacitinib against abatacept, abatacept being a drug that modulates T-cell co-stimulation by binding to CD80 and CD86. I've long thought abatacept was a relatively underappreciated drug for rheumatoid arthritis, and at the end of this trial, you'll see that I still kind of think that. Let's get into the methods, though. To get into this trial, you had to have rheumatoid arthritis for at least 3 months with moderate to severe active disease, and you had to have at least one biologic DMARD or unacceptable side effects from at least one biologic DMARD. I like that. This is setting you up to study a relatively refractory patient population. Exclusion criteria were all more or less reasonable, and for once they didn't exclude people who were RF-CCP negative. I think this is kind of cool, and I was excited to see this trial. At first glance, the design itself was good. It was a double-blind, phase 3, active comparative trial in 120 sites in 28 countries. As have been all of the phase 3 trials investigating upadacitinib, this was a very big, well-designed, randomized controlled trial. Now, patients were randomized 1-to-1 to extended-release upadacitinib at a dose of 15 mg daily. There was some weirdness with the 30 mg dose, and they revised it partway through, but I don't think it's a big issue. The comparator group got intravenous abatacept, which is fine. I think most of us give sub-Q these days, but I don't have a strong pre-trial rationale for thinking that IV would be worse than sub-Q. And both groups got a matching placebo of the other. So if you got the oral Janus kinase inhibitor, then you also got placebo IV. If you got abatacept IV, you get an oral placebo. Starting at week 12, patients who didn't have at least a 20% improvement were allowed to have their background medications adjusted. Again, I don't think this is a big issue, but I should note that Janus kinase inhibitors work quickly. So you can imagine a world where patients who are on the Janus kinase inhibitor had less twiddling with their background medication. Ultimately, the way this trial was designed, though, I don't think it mattered. Now we get to my first bone of contention, which is, of course, the primary endpoint. My good friend Jeff Sparks decided to steal my thunder on this on Twitter. This was a very craftily selected primary endpoint. They used the DAS28 CRP at week 12, which is only problematic if you think deeply about each of these drugs. All medications for rheumatoid arthritis can normalize the CRP. That is an explicit goal of treatment, but it should be noted that some are more aggressive at doing that than others. Tocilizumab is the classic example of this. It is very hard to find a patient who has an elevated CRP on tocilizumab. I typically wonder if they're actually having good adherence if I see that. Janus kinase inhibitors similarly affect the IL-6 pathway, thereby essentially normalizing the CRP. That's a good thing, I guess, but normalizing the CRP is not the goal. The goal is to improve patients' quality of life. We want less tender joints, we want less swollen joints, and we want them to say, overall, I feel better by some patient-reported outcome measure. DAS28 CRP is not an unreasonable outcome measure. It is a commonly used outcome measure, but let's be honest. There's a very real world where this trial was effective, and I put that in quotes, by simply normalizing a lab value and not necessarily impacting a patient's quality of life. More on that later, though. My next quibble comes immediately afterwards, which is that this was planned as a non-inferiority trial. I am not a big fan of non-inferiority trials. So let's take a brief step back and talk about what that even means. The typical randomized controlled trial that we run in medicine is a superiority trial. This comes from the perspective that we have equipoise in the field. The null hypothesis is therefore that there is no statistically significant difference between the two therapies. We run the trial. If there is a significant difference between the two, we say that the null hypothesis is rejected, and we assign whichever one won superiority. The non-inferiority trial flips this on our head, and the null hypothesis is that the new treatment is in fact inferior. The trial then runs, and we reject the null hypothesis if we can demonstrate that the new treatment is not inferior. Couple problems come from that. The first is, what do we mean by inferior? You have to determine an inferiority margin, which is to say that the investigators themselves get to pick what they mean by inferior. They decided that 0.6 on the DAS-28 CRP would be their inferiority margin, which is pretty reasonable, I guess, but it's intuitively less clear to me that this is good or bad compared to a simple superiority trial. The second, and this is a methodological problem that I always have trouble grappling with, is that a non-inferiority trial flips the classic intention to treat preference on its head. In a superiority trial, we like intention to treat analyses because it's viewed as a more conservative approach. In a non-inferiority trial, this isn't necessarily the case because biasing towards the null is in fact helping the treatment that we're trying to prove is non-inferior. This is complicated because dropout can technically cut either direction, and there's a lot of esoteric methodological debates of how you should handle missing patients in a non-inferiority trial. I'm going to skip getting into that for now and just say that it's a little more complicated because it's not the way we typically think of trials. The last reason that I don't like a non-inferiority design is that we're very rarely in rheumatology trying to decide if something is non-inferior. We want to know if one treatment is better than the other. That's what the goal of comparative effectiveness trials is. They did not set out to do that here, which bothers me, but they did wind up backing their way into it. So let's talk about the results. This trial ultimately randomized 613 patients. That is a lot of people with rheumatoid arthritis. The majority of them were female, over 80%. They had rheumatoid arthritis for over 12 years, which is a long time to have rheumatoid arthritis. The vast majority were white, which is not great, less generalizability. 60% or so had a positive RF, and almost 70% had had one prior biologic DMARD. Like I said at the beginning, they designed this trial in such a way that they would probably get patients who had relatively refractory disease, and that is in fact the case, which I like. With regard to the primary endpoint, which was the non-inferiority margin for upadacitinib versus abatacept, there's a significant difference between the two. The null hypothesis is rejected. Therefore, we think that abatacept and upadacitinib are about the same. That is not in itself a terribly useful conclusion, but there are a number of secondary endpoints that I think are worth noting. The first is that they also checked for superiority, and they also found superiority. So from the beginning, they could have designed this as a superiority trial, and based on the DAS-28 CRP, they would have been successful. That's an important data point. If you're tracking disease activity with a DAS-28 CRP, you can say that upadacitinib is more likely than abatacept to improve that particular outcome measure. But like I said, that's not the outcome measure that I care most about. I care about whether this improves patients' swollen joints, tender joints, their quality of life. Thankfully, we have other outcome measures in the supplemental appendix, so let's go digging. On page 18 of the supplement, they calculate the ACR20, ACR50, and ACR70. These are outcome measures that are classically used in these trials, and they're a little bit more resistant to the CRP, although they also include the CRP. All of them include a 20, 50, or 70% improvement, whichever one you're looking at, in tender joint count and swollen joint count, and you have to meet 3 of 5 out of improvement on a VAS pain score, patient global, physician global, HAC, DI, and CRP. So the CRP is still in there, although you don't necessarily have to normalize your CRP to meet an ACR 20, 50, or 70. In this case, it did look like upadacitinib beat abatacept in those cases by a relatively small margin, but one nonetheless. Now you're probably asking yourself at this point, if I'm being so hard on the DAS-28 CRP, what outcome measure would I like? Well, the simple answer is the CDI. The CDI is based on a tender joint count, a swollen joint count, a patient global assessment, and a physician global assessment. A score from 0 to 2.8 is considered clinical remission, and as you can tell, there are no lab values necessary to get an improvement on the CDI. Thankfully, AbbVie did check the CDI in all these patients, and we have that data. It's figure F7, page 21. How many patients achieved low disease activity with a CDI? 58% in the upadacitinib group versus 51.8% in the abatacept group. That equates to a number needed to treat of 15 for low disease activity. As far as remission is concerned, the difference was 20.8 and 13.6, or a number needed to treat of 12. These did look statistically significant to me. In particular for remission, the error bars don't cross each other over. And so at the end of the day, I think that if they'd actually designed this trial with CDI as the primary outcome measure and done it as a superiority trial, they probably would have had a positive trial. I really wish they had done that. They didn't, but it's not too far off. All things being equal, it does seem like upadacitinib is more effective at bringing about DAS28 CRP remission and also CDI remission than abatacept. That brings me to an important question, which is, are all other things equal? I think there are three important places where we should assess this. The first, of course, is safety. Very few trials are adequately powered to assess safety, but this was a very big trial. In this trial, there were numeric differences with regard to adverse events that favored abatacept. 61.2% of patients had any adverse event versus 69% in the upadacitinib group. Now, this was somewhat different with regard to severe events. There were 10 severe events out of 303 in the upadacitinib group and 5 out of 309 in the abatacept group, which were mostly infection. Serious infection was a little bit more common, opportunistic infection a little bit more common. And there were major adverse cardiovascular events in one patient and VTE in one patient that were in the upadacitinib group. It's hard to draw firm conclusions from this, but my gestalt is that abatacept is marginally better tolerated than upadacitinib. At the end of the day, these are small margins, but there are margins that exist nonetheless. The second question for whether or not this is superior is ease of use. Patients do prefer taking oral medications over IV. Janus kinase are oral, and I do give Jax the nod in that regard. Last but not least is cost. At this point, both of these medications are very expensive, but in the future, I'm hoping that Janus kinase inhibitors will drop precipitously. Unlike biologic therapies, you can crank Janus kinase inhibitors out of a basic lab without having some stew brew up all these weird molecules. So theoretically, in the future, Janus kinase inhibitors will probably be more acceptable. So with that, let me note a couple things that make me pretty happy about this trial. The first is that it's comparative effectiveness. Kudos to AbbVie for actually doing one of these trials. We don't have enough of them, and I think they're really helpful. You're always sticking your neck out, and you're always spending a lot of money to do one. So I am glad that it happened, and they should be commended for going down that road. A few shenanigans over the endpoint notwithstanding, it looks like this drug did probably beat abatacept. Next, kudos to AbbVie for actually publishing patient-reported outcome measures when the trial comes out. I don't understand why a lot of these lupus trials have found it so difficult to give me the SF-36 or the HAC-DI at the same time as they publish the primary outcome measures. In this case, if you scroll down to page 22 of the supplemental appendix, it does look like upadacitinib was better with regard to the HAC-DI, at least over the first 3 months. That matters to me as a rheumatologist because, at the end of the day, most of our therapies don't save lives. Rather, they improve patients' quality of life, and I think the best way to get to that is to ask the patient, are you doing better? In this case, the answer is yes. One final note before I go. It's really nice to have so many options for rheumatoid arthritis. I think these are both good drugs, and I'm actually coming away, as I came into it, thinking that abatacept is probably underrated as far as it goes in rheumatoid arthritis. Despite this, it looks like the Janus kinase inhibitors, and in particular upadacitinib, are a marginally better option for rheumatoid arthritis. Crafty endpoints and non-inferiority design notwithstanding, this was a positive trial for upadacitinib. Along with a number of other trials that have been published in the past few years, this looks like a good drug and one that I think we'll all be using for rheumatoid arthritis in the years to come. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing your feedback. I'm on Twitter at EBRoom. And thank you for sharing with friends. Have a great week.